Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone. Christmas is fast approaching, which is super depressing, actually. But you know how you can take the edge off? You can buy a copy of Loose Units, the book. You can grab it online at Booktopia. That's actually the cheapest place to get it. Hurry up and get it from Booktopia. But it's the reason this podcast exists. It is something we're both very proud of. So run out now and grab Loose Units for that special person in your life for this Christmas. Hey folks, just a heads up, the following episode contains extremely triggering and graphic content. When I was a kid, my dad was a cop. You see, my dad was a cop in the 1980s in Sydney, which has been widely regarded as one of the most dangerous times to be a police officer in Australia. It was basically the Wild West. So I wrote a book about it. It was called Loose Units. And then we did a podcast about it. Loose Units Season 1 was an incredible experience, and we loved every minute of it. But it turns out that Dad did more than just patrol the streets. He plunged headfirst into the terrifying world of forensics. So on this season of Loose Units, that's what we're doing. We're going deep into the world of forensics and fingerprints and all of that good stuff. Well, I say good stuff. Actually, things got worse than ever. So strap in for Loose Units Season 2, Electric Blue. Hello and welcome to Loose Units. I'm Paul Verhoeven. Sitting across from me is my grizzled ex-cop dad, John Verhoeven. Dad, do you think grizzled is a fair...
No, it's ridiculous. What does it mean?
Well, you know, grizzled's like...
Grizzled.
It's a compliment. It means, you know, you got some stubble, you got a bit of an edge to you. Give me a look. A grizzled look. Well, look, at the end of last episode, you answered a listener's question in a very strange roundabout way, in a way which I actually don't think answered the question, where you talked about a small town country police officer and there was a crime involving a body, and you, in forensics, requested to have the hands sent down so you could fingerprint the hands.
Yep.
What did that cop do?
Well, he thought he'd save on postage,
yep.
Which was, you've got to at least say that he was thinking, well, fuck knows what he was thinking. But what we asked to have the pair of hands sent down.
Yeah.
He decided to save on postage. Maybe he didn't. I don't know what he was thinking. But he took it upon himself to chop every finger off. So we get a box of fingers, 10 fingers. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, we could never identify the person.
Right. So
because, you know, the mathematical permutations... Is that the word?
I don't know if it's the word, Dad.
Or computations. Anyway, it would have been trillions of complex, you know, whatever.
All right. So how are they packaged?
In a small box.
Ice?
Well, the ice would have melted, Paul.
So what, like those packing foam peanut things?
Oh, I can't remember.
You don't remember. What, sawdust?
Fuck. Look, it was a fuck up.
Shredded newspaper?
But what used to happen, we used to get bodies, we used to call them floaters, and they were bodies that had been out to sea for some time,
yeah.
And they'd come in and we used to remove the hands, and we used to work on them at the morgue, and if it was difficult, we'd take them back to the laboratory.
Mm.
We had various techniques, which we used to employ, which were really, really interesting. And you were often improvising and sort of, you know, making up or coming up with new ideas on ways of getting prints off these hands that were moist and sort of weeping, not crying, just...
What is weeping, by the way?
Just where fluid is continually pouring out of the pores of the skin.
Right.
And you can't... It's just they're wet hands and you can't ink them, so you've got to dry them.
Right.
So prior to me starting at the Central Fingerprint Bureau, there was a very famous story of one particular detective. He had a pair of hands and he wanted to dry them out. So he took them up onto the roof of the old CIB, and he left them out there for a few hours. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Seagulls came down and ate them.
No.
Yep.
Really?
True story.
Ate the hens?
Yep.
Well, not all of them. You couldn't...
No, there were bits left, but not that enough. Was a fuck up.
So when you say he took the hens up to dry them...
Yeah, he just left them on the roof.
Yeah, but like... Okay, first of all, how far up the wrist are you cutting?
Just above the wrist.
And do you cut it yourself?
Yeah, I've done that many times.
You've sawed through someone's...
Not saw. We used to use these kind of secateurs.
Oh, gross.
Yeah.
Oh, Dad, that's gross.
Yeah, well, how would you do it?
I wouldn't.
No, but if you'd have to. You can't just say, I'm sorry.
imagine me just first day of work. This is gross. I'm not doing it.
No, it is gross, but look, you know.
How do you, I mean, this is, I think, a very useful skill to have, but and maybe our listeners will benefit from this. How do you turn off the part of your brain that says, that's a person I shouldn't be cutting their hand off?
Look, it's been a long time.
But I can see you already kind of slipping back into... You're shaking your head and you look panicked.
No.
But did you never go, oh,
no,
boy.
There are things I don't like the sound that the secateur makes as it snaps through the bone.
I'd be worried if you did, Dad.
Mm, that's pretty bad.
But, like, you cut through someone's hand, right?
And then you put them into a... We used to use plastic bottles with a lid. Because generally they... Or not generally, but quite often they may be slightly on the... they'd have a bit of an odour.
So you... Wait, okay. So you put the...
I mean, I remember I was driving back to the Central Fingerprint Bureau and it didn't escape... Believe you me, these things didn't escape me. I looked down to my left and there and I'd put a little seatbelt around...
Around what?
The pair of hands. True.
Were they sharing a jar or one jar each?
No, they were...
I don't remember.
Actually, no, they had their own jar each.
Right.
So it was a pair of hands.
Yeah.
And I'd strap them in for the ride back to the... That sounds weird. But the thing is, you know, I just thought... I remember the moment did not escape me, the pathos and the weirdness.
Mm. Is that so that you could drive in the carpool?
No, I didn't use the transit lane because, well, you didn't need to have three people in the car to use a transit lane.
Oh, that'd be two pairs of hands.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm asking...
Anyway, it was just weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's what I wanted to know. What other things did you have to do to the human body to prep it for your job? I mean, cutting someone's hands off and then drying them on a rooftop, putting them in jars, like the segmentation and partitioning of a human body is really strange. And I don't think it's something people really think about because, you know, a couple of episodes ago, you, and I'm sorry if this triggers people, you or your partner wore a dead boy's hands to fingerprint those hands.
Mm.
That's something that really did achieve something that helped people, right? It's one of those those really terrifying things that actually helps people in the long run.
Mm.
What else did you have to do in that room, you know, hunched over a gurney with secateurs in hand or whatever?
Well, I was given there was a person that had passed away in Woolloomooloo, suburb in Sydney.
Yes.
And his body had gone into fairly early stages of mummification.
What does that mean?
Where the body starts to dry up.
Oh, okay.
And it becomes wrinkled and dark. And, you know, here's an interesting thing. I was watching a documentary about the terrible tsunami that struck Thailand and Sri Lanka some years ago. And a friend of mine, he was involved in the identification.
Really?
Yeah. And what a lot of people might not realize is that decomposition takes place if there's no refrigeration. So if you're talking up in, you know, Asian countries or even Northern Australia where there's extreme heat and humidity, the putrefaction of a body is accelerated rapidly. And believe it or not, Paul, and this I found quite interesting, and that is that after a few days, you just can't identify people. Even if you know them.
What do you mean?
the body, they all just end up looking exactly the same. Isn't that weird how you think if someone passes away, we think of it in the West as, not the West, but under sort of refrigeration type systems, the body maintains its look for as long as you like. So right. If a body's been embalmed, like Mussolini and people like that, you know, bodies that are held in state, they can be, they look the same pretty well. So Mussolini, you know, 60 years later, or Stalin, they're held in state behind glass and they still look like the person.
Sure.
But with decomposition, no refrigeration in a very hot, humid environment,
yeah.
Within days, you cannot identify the person. You just, even if it's your son or daughter or mother or father, you can't tell. So that's scary.
What about dental records? Can that be used?
It can be, but what happens if they've never been to the dentist? What happens if you don't know the dentist that they were seeing? Yeah. What happens if they saw a dentist overseas and then came back here? I mean, I haven't been to the dentist. I go for a checkup, but I've not had a filling in probably maybe 40 years.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, that's an aside. But so I was given this body. I went to the morgue and there was this, and it had started to sort of really, really sort of dry out.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at the hands and just above the thumb, there's that fairly padded, if you sort of squeeze that skin just there.
Oh, yeah, the yes.
Whatever that is here. But that's but inside it, there was like a bit of a hole and I could see some tendons, but there were maggots still inside.
Oh, Jesus.
And God. I had to take the hands off the body where I used, you know, as I described before, some sort of cutting implement, secateurs.
Yep.
And I took them back to the laboratory. And I had to identify them. So what I decided, they were incredibly wrinkled and semi-mummified. And then I said, you're thinking laterally all the time. And I came up with a bit of a technique where if I wet the fingers, I could get some form back into them. And then I'd done some research on a process called the microtome process. And that's where they take slivers, micro slivers of skin.
Yeah.
They inject a dye into it. And that's called histology. And then I had this bit of an idea where I could actually get some form back into the finger. So what I did, I got a rubber band and I put it between the two digits and I tightened the band on the finger.
Which would have
stopped any fluid. Yep, and then what I did, I then injected with a syringe into the top section of the finger, into the pad. And I kind of injected it, similar to embalming, where it gave it form again.
Like plumped it up or something?
Plumped it up.
Yep.
And then I took it down to the histology department at the Division of Forensic Medicine and they froze the finger.
Oh, wow.
And then they took slivers, a little bit like if you go to a small goods, like a delicatessen, and they use that big machine and they slice big chunks of salami and it peels off a segment of meat.
Yeah.
Well, this was peeling off an incredibly thin segment of the skin.
Yeah.
And what I did, I then put it between two bits of glass. I then took that back to the laboratory and I used that as a negative and I projected it down onto photographic paper. And I managed to get a partial print and I wrote a small paper. So that was pretty exciting.
Have I seen that? I think I've seen... Okay, when I was growing up...
Yes, you're right.
Yeah,
you remember.
I saw a dyed fingerprint.
You're right. How incredible.
Wedge between glass.
That's it.
And what's weird is in science class in biology, they made us dye, like we'd peel off an onion skin and dye it.
Mm.
And we put it between glass. And I always felt really uneasy looking at that.
That's weird, Paul, I must have taken that home as part of my...
You did.
...incredible collection of, you know...
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
And you mentioned a couple of episodes ago that that Grandpa, what was he? He edited some stuff for the police journal.
He ended up doing a lot of editing for probably 10 years.
Did you get in that gig?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I got it for him.
So technically speaking, you worked with your dad on a police-related project as well.
Mm.
Oh, this is starting to become a generational thing, isn't it?
And he was a really, really... really great editor. He did a lot of work for a guy called Barry Fay, who was really, really wrote some really, really heavy shit. But listen, can we just talk about something that's quite interesting?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, please.
Okay. So there was a lady in a suburb in Sydney,
mm-hmm.
and she lived by herself. And for many years, she'd been experiencing some difficulty with her electrical system. Back in the day, used to have fuse boxes. I know they've still got fuse boxes, but back you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, they had fuses and you'd pull the fuse out and you'd go down to the local hardware store and you could buy wire. And the wire was rated. It came on like a sort of a...
Like a spool?
No, not a spool. It was like a cardboard sort of sheet, and it had, but it had various thicknesses of this particular wire because it depended on what fuse it was going into. Do you know what a fuse is for?
It's the magic plug that keeps your house alive.
Yeah, but if the fuse back in the day, if you overloaded a particular system, the fuse wire would melt. And it, and the appliances would shut down.
Yep.
So you'd go outside, open up the fuse box. It was generally winter and raining.
Yeah.
And you'd use a torch and you'd pull the fuse out. You had to pull all the fuses out to find out which one had... And you could clearly see that this wire had melted.
Yeah.
And this particular lady in this house, she was having continual problems, and a lovely neighbour decided to come over and fix it once and for all.
Yep.
Because he was sick and tired of her continually... getting him to come over and fix the fuse.
Okay.
So what he did, he got a nail, and he stuck that in, and that became the fuse wire. Now, what do you think about a wire that's made of, supposed to be super, super thin, that when there's too much current going through it, it's going to overload. To stop a fire or an explosion,
yeah,
the fuse wire melts, disconnects, cuts power. It's an amazing, it's an ingenious system.
But a nail can't melt, right?
Correct. So this this guy had, he'd got the shits with her and he decided to stick a nail in. And the good news for him, he never ever got called back because it never blew.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You with me? What are you thinking now?
My guess is if you are holding a nail and you put it into a fuse, does that not send the electricity through the nail and into your body?
No, no, no. You put the nail in where the fuse wire would go,
yeah,
and you stick it back in the board,
yep,
and then you just go on your merry way.
Yeah.
So it means that if she has any future problems with any electrical gadgets, they're not going to blow. The power won't go off. You with me?
Yeah.
So what he was doing with the nail, he was sort of bypassing all the safety rules so that it would never blow.
Okay.
Which is a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
So, years later.
Years later?
Yeah, years and years later.
That's a long-term solution.
Yep.
Jesus.
Years and years later.
Okay.
There are no more problems with the appliances.
Right.
Nothing blew. She decides to take her own life. So, she hops in the bath and she... There used to be a type of... heater called a Speedy. That's Speedie. That was a brand,
yep,
of radiator. I mean, I used to cook toast as a little boy by holding the toast on a fork and holding it really, really close to the heater.
I did the same thing. Do you remember at our house? I would sit there. You would come home. I would have gotten those the satay skewers, the wooden skewers. I'd be holding bread up, toasting it. We had a perfectly good toaster, but I wanted to go camping and you wouldn't let
me. But was that electric or gas?
That would have been probably electric.
Okay. Yep. So what she decided to do is that she hopped in the bath. She filled it up with water, hopped in.
Shit, I know. Okay, sorry, continue. I've just figured it out. Go on.
And then she turned the heater on.
Yeah.
And then she dropped the heater in.
Yep.
To the bath with her.
Mm-hmm.
And it...
It didn't stop.
It electrified her.
Yeah.
And then it began to boil the water. And it boiled it, and it boiled it, and it cooked her. And then, on a Sunday... Her sons were coming around for Sunday lunch.
Oh.
And they could smell the most incredible roast.
Oh, shit.
They could smell the most incredible, beautiful, succulent meat cooking. And they knew that it was a ritual with the family that every Sunday was time to have a Sunday dinner.
Oh, my God.
And they went inside and they're calling out to their mum. And there was no one in the kitchen, and weirdly, there was no food prepared, but they could smell something cooking. And they went into the bathroom, and the first son, when he got into the bathroom, he fell, he slipped on the fat, because it had burnt and boiled, and the nail stopped the heater blowing.
The fuse is meant to trip and turn the power off when there's an overload.
Instantaneously.
Right? But what happens is the nail has ensured that the cooking process just kept going.
So it was just this 2-bar speedy radiators in the water.
Just rolling
and it's just completely. And it. What would you like me to sort of paint the scene?
Just quickly, hey, listeners, if you're struggling with this, skip ahead a few minutes. If you're not, here we go.
So, what happened was the steam actually had a high fat content in it. So, it just coated the bathroom with like this layer of fat. And the fluid level had gone down, I'm trying to give it in centimetres, maybe, let me think about this, maybe 30 or 40 centimetres.
Jesus Christ.
But what had happened was, incredibly, is that all the skin... All her skin had just fallen away, literally fallen off the bone. So there was a skeleton, like a bleached white skeleton, in this soup, like a broth. It's fucked up. But imagine the boys seeing their mum like that.
How old were they?
God, that's such a bad story.
How old were they?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
They're adults.
I'm just curious, where'd the muscle go?
No, everything just completely...
Cooked. Muscle, organs, everything just slid off.
Have you ever... a really good analogy. Get a leg of lamb, cook the shit out of it, then reach in with tongs and pull the bone, that main bone. And what happens?
The meat slides off.
Correct. Just slides away beautifully into the pot. You're holding the bone and all everything else is left inside. Now, listeners, please don't think worse of me for sort of laughing because it's how I cope.
But it's trauma. Mm. This is not. We're not well here. We're not
it was pretty bad. So there was like a bloody, oozy, fatty, meaty sort of stock, like a brew, in the bottom, maybe only 2 inches. Can you imagine that? So that's amazing.
I mean,
she was dead, by the way.
Yeah, thanks for that. Although, having said that, you have been told that you had to once do a time of death
on a skeleton. Actually, not the full skeleton.
Just bits of it.
Just some bones.
So, quick sidebar.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that this woman was...
Yep.
...was in the air around her or in the bath beneath her.
Correct.
I know this is a...
Now, I don't want to... I'm not into puns, Paul, but it was a speedy death. The brand of the heater?
Yeah, I got that. You look very pale. How do you think... I know this is we're just impossible pie in the sky stuff. How do you think the people who found the body, her sons, processed that if they ever...
I don't think they ever, ever could, because I'm finding it hard to process
it now. I don't think you
would... it gives me the creeps.
You would never recover.
Because I can see her body in the bath. Well, the bones.
Yeah.
It's surreal, isn't it?
How do you...
It's incredible.
I know this is a silly question. How do you start doing your job in a room like that?
Well, you've got to make sure you don't slip over.
Yeah.
Imagine ending up inside the bath with her.
Isn't that...
And people might go, what the fuck are you talking about? But I was at the morgue. We used to have this makeshift, like a special trolley.
Yeah.
Like a set of three or four stairs that were on wheels, and your objective was to climb up those stairs, and you'd have the body in front of you in all its horror. These were generally bodies that were completely... that had been run over by trains, for example, that were just fucked.
Yeah.
And one of our top guys, he arched forward and fell with his camera into the slops of a body that had been under a train. So he had his incredible camera that was worth about $10,000.
You know what? I'm not worried about the camera. I'm worried about his psychological well-being at this point.
I worked with a very famous... I saw this for my very own, through my very own eyes. When I first was taken into the forensic section to, you know, be shown around, I remember that there was a particularly wacky elderly forensic expert. He'd been there for at least 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really bad.
Okay.
He had a pair of fetuses on his desk. You know how some people have got lamps?
Or a photo of their family?
Yeah. He had a pair of fetuses.
Why?
In jars, and he'd named them. And then they had one on the left and one on the right side of his desk.
Why?
Because he was fucked up.
What
they were from a case he'd worked on
years
before.
What did he name them?
I can't remember.
Okay.
Is that... And that made me think, you know what? I don't want to end up like that.
Yeah, you think the longer you stay in
Definitely.
A job like that.
Okay. Yeah. And as Dirty Harry famously said, and it's one of my favourite expressions, a man has to know his limitations. And by golly, I knew what mine were.
Yeah.
If you can ever go to a job, it's like when I did skydiving. A very wise instructor said to me, he said, the day you jump out of a plane and you don't worry about what could go wrong is the day you stop skydiving. And the day in the police force where I thought, this is not affecting me, that's the day you go, I'm out of here.
You don't think that's when you can do your job well, because you're...
No, because I like to think that... Because they're people.
Yeah.
And I like to be compassionate and...
Yeah. I've heard that thing before of like, if you shouldn't ever be okay with certain things.
Mm.
You shouldn't ever... Like, certain things are not normal and are not okay. And you can, you know, compartmentalize so you don't get traumatized by them, but you should also know what's going on. Okay, that was pretty intense. We have a question here from Rachel. Question for John and perhaps Paul. Sorry if it's a bit intense. Okay. Each week you guys tell really horrific stories and are often quite upset by them. I study history and I'm often confronted with the worst possible things human beings can and have done to each other. It has come to the point that these things have become almost run-of-the-mill to me. How do you maintain your compassion and not become jaded?
Well, I think it's really important to tell these stories. I do sometimes worry about any living relatives, you know, but we haven't had any feedback so far.
Yeah.
And then perhaps there are people out there that have heard various things and just perhaps thought, wow, I really wanted to, you know, maybe it's given some people some closure. But whenever you're dealing with a human being, whether alive or dead, look, you've got to be reverent. And I remember when I worked for a funeral parlour, I don't want people to think I'm sort of got this fixation with death, but I did work in the funeral industry as well, whilst I was in the fire brigade.
Yeah.
And we had to once do a funeral, and there were no relatives at the funeral. And the guys, I was sort of in charge, and we get to the crematorium, and a couple of the guys that I was with, like the pallbearers,
yeah.
And there was not one person turned up to this guy's funeral. not one. And we were standing there, and a couple of the guys kind of were a bit, you know, just mucking around. And I just said, guys, what the fuck are you doing? We have to, this is a special time for this poor person. We're the only people here. Let's at least be decent.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just an aside.
Yeah.
So.
But like when you tell these stories, I mean, I agree. I think it's really important to like never lose sight of the fact that these are human beings we're talking about. Mm. These are real people. I don't think we have. I mean, the amount of deliberation, the amount of freaking out we do over like, are we doing the right, like, are we doing these people a justice? Are we talking about them the right way? We really try and approach this as respectfully as possible. But I think Rachel has a good point. Like, I think it's important to, you know, try and keep the humanity in it. How do you not become jaded, though? How have you not become jaded over the years?
Because I can compartmentalize, and I can use these situations to actually be empowered.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I run on the soft sand every morning and go for a swim all year round, and I just think it's great to be alive. And that's, yeah. And I was, you know, they talk about glass half full, half empty.
Yeah.
My glass is overflowing. Mm. I have a sunny disposition, and I have a good nature, and it's important to be you know, be good and compassionate and caring and be aware, and I never take one day for granted ever. I'm really, really happy to be alive.
Yeah, I can tell.
I love it.
Do you think talking about these stories with me on the show has helped you put some of this stuff in perspective?
Possibly. I have never really discussed them at all except with you. Mm. But look, when we finish, when it's a wrap, and you know, I'll go out and, you know, go to the toilet, have a coffee, I feel cool. I don't dwell on these things.
Okay.
Which is good. And a lot of people do, but I don't.
Yeah. Well, that was a pretty heady episode. We hope you're doing okay. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Loose Units Season 2 Electric Blue. If you haven't already got your copy of Loose Units, the book, what are you doing? Apparently, it's really good. You can grab it online. You can get it at Dimmicks. You can get it on Booktopia. I believe that's a really great way of getting it. If you want to go to your bookstores and badger them and order the book, that's a good idea too, because Christmas is approaching and it'll make a really great gift. Thank you so much for listening. Loose Units is a Pillow Talk production.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.